For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. For all the new people, I'm Tygon Layton, the teacher here at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, and I'm very happy to have giving the talk this morning Kazan Titus O'Brien, who's one of our priests here, and the Tenzo, the head of the kitchen, an important position at Zen temples, and also a member of our board. We're in the middle of a practice commitment period. We've been studying a particular text, the Jewel Mare Samadhi, by Dongshan, the 9th century Chinese founder of the practice tradition we're in. So I think Kazan will be speaking in part to some of that text. So, Kazan, thank you.
Thanks, Tygon. So welcome. Who's here for the first time? Raise your hand. That's, as Tygon likes to say, and is very true, it's very auspicious for us. So thanks for bringing your fresh beginner's mind to help us all in our practice. So we've been studying this text, as Tygon said, called in Japanese the Hokyo Zanmai, or the Song of the Precious Mirror Samadhi. It's in your chant books on page 10, is that right? Page 10, if you want to look at it. It's a couple pages long, and it's the sort of focus of our practice study during this practice commitment period many of us are engaged in, which is a 8-week or so long period of time that's traditional. It's a traditional, a variation on a tradition going back all the way to the historical Buddhist time, where there would be a period of intensified practice once or twice per year. With our sort of lay practice temple, we've modified it. So we're not in the monastery for 3 months sitting many periods of zazen together every day. But it does provide this sort of container for us to focus a little bit. And each year as we do this, our teacher Tygon is kind of orienting us with a sort of teaching focus. And this text is particularly rich and complex, maybe esoteric, it could appear. One of the things that I've been noticing about it is that it seems almost structured in these short dualisms that are presented and then subverted. And then those are, in a very complex, nuanced way, then they're set up against each other, too. So basically what this text says over and over is, it's not this, it's not that. It's this, but it's not that. It's maybe sometimes this, except when it's not that. Except when it's this. So it just does this over and over. And in that way, it's actually a wonderful reflection of Zen teaching itself, which is nothing other than our life. You know, our life presents itself as this, and then immediately shows us that it's not that. And then it's presented in another way. And so we're just shown again and again, wherever we think we have it, wherever we feel that we can plant our flag and say this is it, we don't need a Zen text to tell us that it doesn't work. And so Tygon asked me a week or two ago what the title of my talk would be, and he had asked us, those of us giving talks during this practice period, to focus on a line or two of this text to speak from. So I chose one and gave him the title Tethered Colts and Cowering Rats, Zazen and the Art of True Settling. So this business of wanting to plant our flag and have a fixed position from which we can act, stand, move, affirm ourselves, because we want affirmation. This is a very fundamental human desire, and there's nothing wrong with it, except when there is. So the thing that really strikes me about this line as instruction for our Zazen practice, this thing that we just did, is that we are often, maybe you experienced this, being a tethered colt, or maybe a cowering rat. So what the lines actually say, it seems to me in this text that this is one of these moments where, while everything is building on itself and related, there's kind of a pause before these lines. It seems these lines seem to start a new little turn of the Dharma wheel. So the lines go, outside still and inside trembling, like tethered colts or cowering rats, the ancient sages grieved for them and offered them the Dharma. Led by their inverted views, they take black for white. When inverted thinking stops, the affirming mind naturally accords. If you want to follow in the ancient tracks, please observe the sages of the past. That's kind of a chunk. there are many of them through this, and they're not fixed. But to me, reading it, this passage seems to have an integrity to it. So outside still and inside trembling, like tethered colts or cowering rats, the ancient sages grieved for them and offered them the Dharma. Well, the them is us. Led by their inverted views. So led by our inverted views, led by my inverted views, I take black for white. When my inverted thinking stops, my affirming mind naturally accords. But really, it's not mine, it's the. Or we could just drop that. I'm sure that's not in the Chinese. It's just affirming mind, which is Buddha mind. And that's what we want. That's what we all came here. We all want to be affirmed. We all want to be liberated from our inverted views. We want liberation. We want to experience freedom from our delusion, from our greed, our anger, our ignorance. This is what we want. But we are like tethered colts and cowering rats. Sometimes, when we're not being Buddhas, even while we're being Buddhas, maybe this isn't abstract, and that's kind of the focus of my talk today. Is this, what is this experience of sitting in Zazen? This text points us to, and all of his in texts point us to, the wonder of Zazen and how it can get us in touch with, if we just go to the top of this page, natural and wondrous, it is not a matter of delusion or enlightenment. Within causes and conditions, time and season, it is serene and illuminating. This kind of language is used a lot, especially in our particular tradition, serene and illuminating power of Zazen. And yet so often our Zazen doesn't necessarily feel serene or illuminating, maybe. And not just our Zazen, but our lives. So if our Zazen isn't separate from our life, we don't want... Well, we're not here to just get a little taste of something and then not have it influence the rest of our life. We want to experience serenity and illumination, and we want to have that extend somehow into our life. And yet we are tethered colts and cowering rats. So how do tethered colts and cowering rats experience serenity and illumination? This is a koan that we are all living. Or if you're not familiar with that term, it's a teaching phrase that goes beyond just your discriminating thought process and into the marrow of your life. How do you actually experience serenity and illumination, which is liberation or freedom, in the conditions of your life, in the hardest, most difficult conditions? How can we experience it? And I think the only way to experience that is to completely experience being a tethered colt or a cowering rat. So what these things reference to me in my own experience, these are our aggressive tendencies and our fears. And these are not small fears. Maybe you've experienced, it takes a great deal of courage, actually, to do what you all chose to do today, which is on a lovely Sunday morning, spring morning, to rather than stay home and have brunch and drink coffee and hang out with your family, or, you know, go line up in one of the wonderful in front of one of the wonderful restaurants in this town where people like to line up on Sunday mornings for brunch. You came here and you engaged in this very difficult activity of just trying to sit still and be with whatever's there. And what is there is loss. So there's a saying in our tradition that has its variations in all traditions, I would imagine, because it's the truth. But that is gain, or loss is enlightenment, gain is delusion. I studied Tai Chi for many years, and in that tradition they say, invest in loss. Where our culture is sort of invested in other kinds of investments, don't you think? Invested in investing. But maybe you've noticed in your life, in those moments when you experience deep loss, you actually, life kind of opens up, cracks open, and you actually feel like you touch something really real, right? But that often takes these kind of traumatic shocks, right? Our nation, in as much as it's a separate entity, experienced a pretty profound trauma, a series of them. I just read this morning another shooting in Denver. A bunch of people got together yesterday to celebrate the legalization of marijuana for recreational use. And someone went and shot two people and a dog. So I'm on Facebook. Nathan is a friend on Facebook. He's our Facebook master, actually. Ancient Dragons Facebook master. Nathan Strait, everyone. And anyway, I was reading on there. I've seen this kind of comment a lot. What is going on? Have you seen that? Maybe people have been saying that to you. Maybe you're thinking that. I think we all are maybe thinking that. What the hell is going on? But this is, you know, that this is happening here, I don't think it doesn't come as any surprise to me. If we truly are practicing, then when these events are happening, you know, when the Middle East is Well, we've been engaged in many... We're in our second decade now of wars in other places where these things are routine and much more severe and traumatic. So these traumas are very deep. There was a teacher who came last summer named Joanna Macy, a friend of Tigan's, and a deep ecologist, activist, feminist, and profound teaching force in the world, Joanna Macy. I suggest you, if you don't know her that well, maybe look her up. And she talked about these larger traumas that have affected us all in profound ways, like the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki caused a profound psychic trauma globally. And it actually led, she talked about how that led directly to this kind of psychic shutdown of the 1950s. Happy days, right? But that was actually a profound period of psychic trauma and withdrawal. I've been thinking a lot about the Beats lately, the Beat poets who really are largely responsible, the Beat generation, the Beatniks. Really, they're the reason we have Zen in America today. So they were the first wave, and what defined them was their sensitivity to the traumas that had occurred. They found themselves unable to anesthetize themselves, or unwilling to anesthetize themselves with the enormous wave of consumerism and materialism that overtook this country in the 1950s. So they realized that they needed to invest in loss in a way. And in fact, the word itself, beat, the reason Kerouac didn't exactly coin it, but he embraced it and popularized it because of its dual aspect. It both means beat down, and through that you can experience beatitude. He was Catholic. Beatitude. So this grace. And so these deep traumas that are not just personal, but we've all experienced them and we will continue to experience them, because everything that you know, everyone that you know, is impermanent and will leave you, or you will leave them. So this very fundamental reality, this is the beginning of the Buddha's teaching. This is the first thing he said. And we come to the cushion, and this is a very hard reality for us to sit in the midst of. And it's not just this lump of a body that you plop down on the cushion, but this is a very complex thing going on here and here, here and there and there. It's a very complex, rich ecosystem and of emotions and thoughts and feelings and sensations. In the Buddhist tradition, they have a wonderful way of talking about this, of skandhas, which literally means like heaps of things. We are heaps of things. And but due to our inverted views, and these views, they come from all kinds of sources. And we don't need to necessarily find where they started, because maybe that's not possible. But we can sit here and we can experience them. And we can, we have this complex system that actually allows us to, well, as this line says, it's natural and wondrous. It's not a matter of delusion and enlightenment. I really, this really struck me as I was preparing for this talk. It's natural and wondrous. So it's a natural thing to be able to contact your serene and illuminating, we might say, Buddha nature. It's natural. It's wondrous. It wants to emerge. It wants to appear. But to allow that thing to appear, you have to invest in loss. You have to invest in an investigation of your traumas, I think. And that's where this line about tethered colts and cowering rats, I think, is just really, this is the power of poetry. This poem that's been handed down from countless, we could say it's 1,000 years old, or we could say it's 1,000,000 years old. It doesn't really matter. It's old. And it's been handed down to us, which is a great blessing and a great boon. The power of that image, I invite you to investigate it for yourself. But it really struck me as true to my own experience of doing Zazen now for some matter of years. And investigating how, basically, it's fight or flight, isn't it? Imagine a tethered colt. That image is so instructive. You know, it's not quite tame. It's doing this. It's wanting to escape, right? You can experience that for yourself. You know, and where are we doing this in our life? You know, trying to escape. Pema Chodron, the great Tibetan Buddhist teacher, said she titled her most famous book, is called The Wisdom of No Escape. You can't escape. So what parts of your body are trying to escape? Or your mind, which manifests in your body? So that's the wonder of Zazen, is that this isn't a philosophical exercise. It's psychosomatic. Which is funny that we've come to use that phrase to mean pretend. But actually, somatic means physical. And science shows us, you know, when you have a thought, it releases chemicals, it becomes manifest in your body. And our body is a record of our traumas, our fears. It struck me in moments that this body is exactly an accumulation. It is exactly an accumulation of fears and delusions and greed and desire. It's exactly what it is. And the wonder of Zazen is that, and the Buddhist path, is that we also experience how that's completely transparent. And it in itself is Buddha. We don't have one without the other. And yet, we can't go rushing after this serenity and illumination without experiencing completely our tethered coltedness and our cowering rattishness, right? So we can experience this literally in our body as tension, you know? As tension, as pain, and as disjointedness. So I've made periodic investigations or study of like Tai Chi, like I said, Aikido, martial arts. I've been an interest my whole life. But I don't know, they led me to Zen, and then Zen took over. And I continue to remain interested and sometimes pick up my studies of martial arts again, but I find Zazen, it's right there in our Zazen. Even yoga, you know, this is yoga, and we just have one posture. or maybe three or four, something like that. But then we realize in these very narrow postures, there's a lot of possibilities. So what's going on in when you're sitting? You know, is part of you moving forward and part of you is like resisting, moving back? Is part of you flowing and part of you is stuck? What wants to flow? What wants to be heard? What wants to be attended to? It's not just an endurance contest. You know, so I think that we sometimes think that we just come and we plop on the cushion and it's just, we just endure and wait for the lightning bolt of serenity and illumination. Wait for it to come up through the floor or maybe hit us from above. And that sometimes happens, despite ourselves. But I think for myself, I brought in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind. I may not even open it, but the title's pretty good. And I truly, every time I sit down to Zazen, it feels like the first time. And it seems like, and I'm sure veteran practitioners here would all understand this, it just gets more and more mysterious. And I just never know what's going to happen when I sit down. I don't know what's going to want to be attended to. But I just listen to Zazen, and I keep aiming towards Zazen, which means all the things that we do, which is, if you were here for the first time, you got instruction about uprightness, settledness, breathing, relaxing. If we can just, you know, and then we look at that, and then we see how we're not doing that. What's not relaxing? Where is the breath not going? How am I not paying attention? Where is my mind? So we do that, and then hopefully that just starts to extend out through the rest of our life a little bit. But the I think it's really important that we become very intimate with our fears and our anxieties and our tendencies for aggression, for fight or flight. Because that, to me, is the tethered colt and the cowering rat, which also can flip real quick. You know, you corner a rat, he's going to cower, and then he's going to attack, right? And you approach the tethered colt aggressively, you're liable to get kicked. But if he can get loose, he'll run. She'll run, right? So this is why we have to, as Suzuki Roshi said, we have to give ourselves a large field. We can't clamp down. You have to give yourself a large field on your cushion. Go wild on your cushion, as another one of our teachers says, so that you can see what are the tendencies, where are my traumas, where have I gotten stuck. I almost had a Beatles lyric there. It'll come to me later. Speaking of which, it's Breakfast on the Beatles with the Beatles on Sunday mornings, and I have that station on my car sometimes. I turned on my car today and the station came on, and it was John Lennon saying, "In the middle of my shame, I call your name, Yoko, Yoko," who was his wife and his great teacher. So in the middle of our shame and our pain and our delusion, hopefully we can open ourselves. Open ourselves, yeah. Hopefully that's what we can do. All right, that's good. Thank you very much. Maybe there's some comments. Does anybody have anything to say? Did that make sense?
Wonderful, wonderful talk. Thank you, Kazan. Comments, questions, responses, please feel free.
Maybe I'll just take the opportunity to read this a little bit from Suzuki Roshi. For a while, you will keep your beginner's mind, but if you continue to practice 1, 2, 3 years or more, although you may improve some, you're liable to lose the limitless meaning of original mind. In the beginner's mind, there's no thought, I have attained something. All self-centered thoughts limit our vast mind. The beginner's mind is the mind of compassion. When our mind is compassionate, it's boundless. So I thought about this. There are some people who are known as great Zen masters who lately gotten into some trouble. Maybe you've heard about this. I don't know. But I think maybe Suzuki Roshi also says if you keep this beginner's mind, it's very self-correcting. It keeps you out of trouble. And I think that some of the trouble some of these people have gotten into is maybe they lost a little bit of that. So it's a challenge for us all, you know. Keep that freshness, that beginner's mind. Yeah, Lloyd.
Yeah, I was really thinking very much. I enjoyed Donald's talk very much. I'm struck by that sort of the difference between the outside and the inside. And I think for those of us who have been practicing for a little while, it becomes very easy to kind of have that, you know, sit calmly, kind of have this smooth exterior, but it becomes a sort of a cheap gimmick, you know. And there can be so easily that, okay, you know, if I'm afraid, I'm just going to go to Zazen and bliss out, as one of my friends said, and just not have to deal with all that stuff that I'm really afraid of. And so, yeah. And I think that, you know, to be able to find, you know, to be able to relax that cold, to, you know, make that rat like the ones outside my home that are like that big and look like, you know, happy puppies walking. to be able to go ahead and experience and not be afraid of, you know, anger or fear or all these other things that can come up, and not just sort of use Zazen as an easy trick to do that, but to be able to really face those things that we don't want to over and over again.
Yeah, and that really helps. I mean, you're underscoring this line that I didn't emphasize as much, but I think it's very important, the beginning of the line, which is outside still and inside trembling. You know, are you just adopt, and then maybe for a long time or certain times, even in one period of Zazen, you are faking it. You are outside still, but inside you're trembling. And that's a wonderful thing to recognize and perfectly suitable just to notice that. That you're holding yourself still, but you're inside trembling. And another line that I really didn't maybe underscore as much as I'd like to, but the ancient sages, they grieved for us. They didn't just patronize us. They grieved for us. Out of their deep compassion, they provided some instruction for us so that we could have an invitation to do what you're saying, Lloyd, which is to really look at it. That we can a lot. It's hard to even recognize sometimes that you can do it. You know, a lot of people don't think it's possible, maybe, to just stop and sit still and look. Right? I mean, maybe that's us. To know that it's possible to sit still and look at what's there, and that it, you can deal with it. That is good news, as we might say in other traditions.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking about this line, outside still, inside trembling, and this idea of stopping, and as you were just answering right now, it occurred to me just to twist that in a slightly different way, because there's, you know, a slightly, you know, outside still, inside trembling, the sages see something a little bit problematic in that and feel sorry for us. But at the same time, they're part of the quality of Zazen is precisely to be, as you said, to be willing to be the tethered colt. And you could even think of sitting on your cushion as a kind of tethering. You're just going to be there. You're not going to afford yourself of the usual opportunity to either step forward into some sort of aggression or to run away. So I think it's also about a slightly positive undertone as well.
For sure. Yeah. Very much so. You know, the whole direction is that we can touch this serenity, this illuminating serenity, right? That's the direction of our practice. And I guess one of the cool things that this text does is just show us, though, we can't go straight for that goody, you know? We actually have to not separate from the skin bag here and now, which is a record of these traumas. Another line I wanted to mention was a line that Tigan shared with me once from his teacher, Rev Anderson, Tenshin Rev Anderson, who said that every incomplete breath produces a ghost. Is that correct? Is that what he said? Something like that. This is really something very true. How many breaths do you have during the course of a day that aren't complete? That are half. I think maybe a lot. And everyone is, something in you is not getting oxygenated. You know? Our system is quite complex and quite natural and wondrous. But because of this, this world that is so inverted, so many views are so inverted, we get traumatized and we don't breathe completely. You know, maybe it's that simple. Maybe it's all that simple. We just don't breathe completely. And so we get these stucknesses. Yeah. Thanks, Yazan. Anybody else?
Yeah.
I love these images too. Outside calm, inside trembling, tethered colt and so on, but I'm wondering if they're also a description of how most of us live most of our lives, not just on the cushion, and that's what's different when we're meditating, is that we become aware of it rather than just continuing to, you know, keep the outside as calm as we can while everything's going on inside, but instead to be aware of it and to look at it.
Yeah, I think that's the point. Yeah. And like I was saying, maybe... I jotted down some lines. I just came across this morning. I was looking something up, and... I don't see it in my notes exactly, but Hakuin, great Japanese Zen master, in his kind of praise of Zazen, says that... And this is true in Dogen. Many teachers have said it, but Zazen is the gate for all generosity, for all compassion, for all wisdom. That Zazen is this gateway to those things. And so we come to Zazen to cultivate that connection, that flame, and then hopefully that warmth spreads. That warmth spreads through our life a little bit. Yeah, that's what we hope.
Zoe?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I was, you know, although I must admit, I didn't like that line. The colts and the rats. I don't know if I watched too many Disney movies or something as a kid. Like, they were always, it seems like a masculine kind of image to me. I was thinking, what would make more sense for the, I think about the many women in my life who sort of die inside. They do that anesthetizing sort of 50s, 1950s kind of thing. Cows, pigeons, what's like a nurturing kind of thing. But, I really appreciated how you sort of unlocked that line for me, because it was one that I didn't, you know, I was like, I don't feel like a colt or a rat, but when I started thinking about what you were saying, it made a lot more sense to me. And I think I was sort of struck at how long trauma sort of persists. It's sort of something I've been thinking about just intergenerationally, how these things can sort of rupture and fracture, and they keep coming around and around. On the phone with my mom a few weeks ago, we had this gigantic rift a couple of years ago, and we're just starting to heal it now, wake up my car accident. And she was upset that I wasn't calling her enough, and I was upset that she wasn't calling me enough when I was at the hospital, right? And there, we had this moment in the conversation where we're both like, I don't know if we're colts, rats, what were we, pigeons, cows, I don't know, but we're both like this, you know? And in that moment, I said, like, stay with me. You know, I said, this is what sitting has brought me to. I was able to say to my mom, who I kind of wanted to, like, just slam the phone down, say, you know, stay with me in this. And I was struck, but she said, I can't, because I'll start crying. I said, well, then cry. It's okay. Neither one of us is going to melt or turn on the fire, you know, turn the fire if we actually cry about this, right? Because it sucks. It does suck. So I've just been very grateful for practice, that it's given me those moments, even with people in my life who don't practice and have made a fine art out of anesthetizing themselves to their trauma for many decades. That you can still have these moments. That power is really here. It's present for everyone. It's always available to them.
Yeah, it's because it's reality, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's amazing. We are so artful about our inverting our views. Maybe the last thing I'll say, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because I wanted to touch on one other line which has come up as being somewhat maybe controversial for some of us, because the images seem kind of have been kind of characterized as maybe masculinist or patriarchal or kind of too warlike or something. But about just a couple lines down, it says, like a battle scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. To me, those images, it says, on the one on the verge of realizing the Buddha way, contemplated a tree for 10 kalpas, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. That's one sentence. And to me, while these criticisms of this line, I think, are totally valid, but it's also like that because we are, the longer we live, the more we realize, at least I realize, I'm like a battle-scarred creature, you know. We get beat up, you know. Life knocks us around, and yet we realize this, and we see it in people. Suddenly, the image in my mind comes of Blanche Hartman, great Zen teacher, Zen master in San Francisco. She's in her 80s. Mm-hmm. And I had the good pleasure to sew this robe with her as my teacher. I could begin weeping now, just thinking and gratitude. And her, you know, she is a battle-scarred tiger. She is a horse with shanks gone gray. And through that, this steely strength, fortitude, power, this spiritual radiance that emanates from that, because she's been sitting still for so long in the midst of so much loss and so much transformation. And you know, this is what the sages, the model of these sages that we appreciate, this is who these people are. They're not, you know, spiritual super men and women. their battle-scarred tigers and gray horses, you know, that were once tethered colts and cowering rats, and maybe still are. Anyway, it's another image.